welcome to another episode of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. It's Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. A progressive and populist insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining show on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people and not just the elite few. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters from his mid-Michigan attic, it's time for the award-winning Pat Johnston. It's all yours, Pat.
Welcome to another installment of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. I'm your host, Pat Johnston. And before I begin, you know, there are some celebrity or famous people deaths that, you know, make you stop for a second or two to remember something that they did way back when that made you feel something during another time in your life. And then there's Dolly Parton's departing from this world. It's strange because we just watched 9 to 5 a couple of nights before Dolly died, and I have to tell you, that's a movie that my family has loved through the years, ever since I was a boy. And in fact, my brother and I still quote parts from the movie still to this day, like, gotta say, Frank, you really pulled it off. Well, we like to think we did, sir. I mean, so we say that line all the time to each other. But for some reason, watching 9 to 5 this time around, which, you know, I hadn't seen for a few years, I caught myself, it's kind of eerie, but I caught myself realizing just how freaking awesome Dolly Parton really is in that movie. You know, who's that? I don't know. Where's Hart? I don't know. You know, and it was her first acting role too. That's what is just so cool about it. I mean, there was Dolly Parton in the middle with one of the greatest actresses of all time, Jane Fonda, and with one of the greatest comedic actresses of all time in Lily Tomlin, yet there she was holding her own and knocking that character, Dora Lee, out of the park. I mean, the scene where she fantasizes of putting her sexist, lying, egotistical, hypocritical bigot of a boss in her shoes is just pure comedy gold. She is awesome in that scene. And I mean, just if you've seen it, you know exactly what I'm talking about, because both Dolly and the late Dabney Coleman are stellar in that scene. And while that movie is now 46 years old, other than Xerox printing machines being the size of a bus and the use of typewriters, the spirit of the movie still holds. As Dolly and Lily and Jane say at the end, you know, that they've come this far, so here's to the beginning. The beginning meaning that women in the workplace are starting to gain a little dignity and a little respect. Everyone, you know, has been sharing their thoughts and words as to what Dolly Parton meant to this world, or meant to their world. And that just speaks not just to her natural talents as an artist, her natural talents as a singer and songwriter, but also as a person who people just gravitated towards. And it's not lost on many of us in these years of Trumpism or MAGA hatred and division and ugliness and crassness and of just pure evil at times. Dolly Parton represented the exact polar opposite. For me, that Dolly Parton helped personally fund the original COVID vaccine research. And also, don't forget about her imagination library, which helped millions of kids read. I mean, that speaks to me, you know, what kind of person Dolly Parton really was. Not to mention how she always backed and supported the LGBTQ plus community too, which, hey, is a bold step for country stars. It was, at least at that time. So rest in peace, Dolly Parton. You really did pull it off. LeftofLansing@gmail.com is my email. Follow me on my socials, especially on Facebook, Twitter, and the Gram. Subscribe and follow the show on YouTube. And please subscribe to the show wherever you are listening. And of course, as always, give it a good 5-star review, please, because that helps as well. Plus, become a member of the show on Patreon. And while there, you could leave a little donation to the show. But to become a member, it's free, and you get everything that I post there free. Okay, coming up here in a few moments, I'm beyond thrilled to talk with this week's guest who's been on the show before, so she is now a returning guest. Jessica Newman is a member of Michigan's Democratic Socialist Party. She's a member of the Ferndale School Board in Oakland County, and she worked for Chris Gilmore Hill's State House District 8 campaign, where Gilmore Hill upset and defeated an incumbent Democrat in that primary race that happened earlier this month. So we'll talk about that victory, why Democratic Socialism is gaining steam with DSA candidates winning across Michigan and the country, but also why progressive populism in general is resonating with the working class that is ready for a new direction. I mean, think about it. Are we currently in a great direction here in this country? This week, dear leader, Trump escalated a trade war with Canada again, announcing that, yes, of course, why not? We're imposing a 50% tariff on imported cars and trucks and also auto parts from Canada. Because, I mean, come on, does that really affect us here in Michigan, especially around the Detroit area? Now, of course, this was just days before that dear leader Trump announced that he would impose a 50% tariff on other Canadian goods such as wine. Hey, how dare he do that? Because we need all the alcohol we can get during these times. I mean, this is just dear leader Trump and the Trump regime having a temper tantrum after trade talks stalled between the U.S. and Canada last week. Canada's prime minister announced that he would do retaliatory tariffs, dollar for dollar, against the U.S., which makes sense since the United States doesn't really have a whole lot to stand on right now. Now, Trump claims that the U.S. doesn't need Canada, but actually on an economic level, especially for those of us in Michigan, yeah, we kind of do. Again, I'll say this, as I've said in the past, I'm not against targeted tariffs, but this capricious, emotional, remember I thought men weren't emotional. Emotional tariff scheme by the Trump regime is just pure insanity. Insanity. Detroit and Ontario ship parts back and forth across the border, and some of it is now traveling across the Gordie Howe Bridge, which is nice, but still, that means that they will now have to pay a 50% tariff every time trucks cross the border. Oxford Economics reports that nearly 37% of the products we make here in Michigan travels to Canada. Oh, that's winning, isn't it? And as Robert Kuttner from the American Prospect noted this week, these tariffs on major makes and models of cars and trucks also comes at a time when the Trump regime gutted EV car production in this country. So while China continues to clean up on the EV car front, we are doing nothing except rolling back fuel efficiency standards in this country, thanks again to the Trump regime. The working class doesn't have money to buy new cars, especially with dear leader's trade wars and tariff insanity. And the working class is also paying more in gas prices and energy prices, thanks to the Trump regime's and Israel's war on Iran, which doesn't seem to be stopping anytime soon. So we're gutting EV car production, fuel efficiency standards, and we're paying more for gasoline due to wars in the Middle East. You think the oil execs and lobbyists who handsomely paid the regime's campaign in 2024 are laughing all the way to the bank? MAGA Republican dingbat from the Thumb Region, Congresswoman Lisa McClain, had this to say about Trump's tariff war with our neighbors from the North. She said, "What President Trump is trying to do, and I applaud him for that, is level the playing field. There's absolutely no way that President Trump is going to make a bad deal for the American people." There's no way, Lisa, really no way, a dear leader is going to make a bad deal for the American people. Let's talk about the Iran war, just for starters, right? I mean, that's cult speak. That's MAGA cult speak. And this is why MAGA Republicans and dear leader Trump have such low approval ratings right now. Everything they are doing is making everything worse. And as progressive U.S. Senate candidate Dr. Abdul Al-Sayed here said this week in Michigan, Trump is escalating a trade war with Canada for his own vanity. Oh, come on, lay off, Dr. Abdul. After all, we're getting dear leader a nice $400 million ballroom. Where are your priorities, Dr. Abdul? And then there's this. Thanks to dear leader's tariffs, families will spend nearly $4,000 per child during the 2026 and 27 school year, including about $175 on school supplies and roughly around $3,800 on packed lunches. That's according to Groundwork Collaborative and the Century Foundation. Oh, well done indeed.
I'm going to lower prices on day one.
Sadly, a majority of Americans actually believe that. Now, on top of wondering if dear leader's brain is actually functional anymore, I'm wondering if we're going to learn whether or not Dr. Abdul's Senate opponent and MAGA Republican and Trump regime rubber stamp Florida Mike Rogers has an opinion whatsoever on these Trump regime tariffs. I haven't heard him say one word. Oh, he likes to talk about one of the major issues out there, which is apparently checking children's genitals for sports. But he doesn't really have anything to say about parents having to spend around $3,800 on packed lunches for the school year. No, Florida Mike Rogers is absent with that one. Now, Florida Mike Rogers did once say that inflation's not really an issue and that paying a little more for coffee isn't all that bad, you weak millennials and Gen Zers out there. Inflation is rising, costs are rising, people losing healthcare, gas prices are high, war continues. More overseas spending continues for war. But Florida Mike Rogers says inflation's not really an issue, but in his campaign ads, he also says that he'll tackle affordability. okay, yeah, I know. Doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to me either. I mean, I think you've seen that ad, right? But what are Florida Mike Rogers' grand strategies to help the working class? What are his grand ideas other than providing more tax breaks for the DeVos family in Michigan and the entire Epstein class? However, Florida Mike Rogers, and I think you'll all love to hear this one, and maybe it'll make you feel real warm and fuzzy here, Florida Mike Rogers has accepted nearly $100,000 from key players in the telecommunications industry while serving in Congress and during his current Senate bid, including from companies whose interests align with legislation he introduced on government data sharing, according to campaign finance records and his congressional record, and that is, of course, from Ben Solis of Michigan Advance. Ah, this is great news, because right now communities across Michigan are fighting against data centers, and they're also fighting against flock cameras from being installed in their neighborhoods where the government is watching their each and every step. Florida Mike Rogers, you've heard me say this, but it is so true, he is the epitome, the stark epitome of what is wrong in our politics, as he gladly runs through the revolving door of corporate and government corruption. Oh, but he's a hard worker, and he'll care about working-class Michiganders. I'd love to ask Florida Mike Rogers, hey, Florida Mike, do you support your dear leader's tariff insanity? And, of course, you know, Trump doesn't believe affordability is a real word, do you? And because of how his so-called economic policies are damaging Michigan beyond repair, do you regret his endorsement considering how he's hurting Michigan? I mean, you haven't really regretted his endorsement even though his name appeared thousands of times in the Epstein files. What would it take for you to regret his endorsement, Florida Mike? No, we won't hear that. Instead, we're going to talk more and more and more about progressive podcaster Hassan Piker than we are about anything else. And that goes for some corporate establishment Democrats in the state, which I will talk about later in this week's Last Call. Before we move on to talk here with Jessica Newman of Michigan's Democratic Socialist Party, I wanted to play this little clip here for you. It's from Tim Skubick's Off the Record program on WKAR, and Skubick and other journalists interviewed MAGA Republican State Senator Jim Runstead, who's also the chair of Michigan's MAGA Republican Party. And here was an answer to a question as to whether or not the Democratic nominee for governor here in Michigan, Jocelyn Benson's pick for Lieutenant Governor, Senate Majority Leader Winnie Brinks, is a far-left extremist. Just listen to this answer from Jim Runstead.
Well, she was there for the most far-left radical agenda I have seen in any state.
Is Winnie Brinks far-left and radical, though?
Oh, there's no doubt. When you look at what they did over those 2 years when they had the trifecta, I have never seen a more far-left agenda that was run through than that.
Oh, Jim, if only. If only. But that's not what happened. Now, I have to admit, it was funny hearing Runstead claim that progressives want to run your lies while MAGA Republicans are the ones who are fighting for more flock cameras and are the ones fighting for data centers. Sadly, though, so did many establishment Democrats in the state. But I'd still love to know what was the far-left agenda here, Jim. I'd like to know, what, ending child marriages? Because we do know that a handful of MAGA Republicans in the state house voted against that ban. So I guess that means you're all groomers then, doesn't it, Jim? But I digress. Now look, I wanted to play that part for you because Jim Runstead claimed that Democrats in Michigan passed this far-left agenda. And he also claimed that many Democratic Party ideas are socialistic ideas, which just goes to show you, okay, which just goes to show you that these MAGA Republicans have no real response to a real progressive populist agenda other than to keep doing or going along with the Trump regime's anti-working class agenda and pro-Epstein class agenda. I mean, no matter what. No matter if it's a corporate establishment Democrat, all right, or a progressive, they'll always call every Democrat a socialist or a communist. It's like they haven't been doing this here for like the last 40 years. They have no counter argument to progressive populist policies. Now, I remember when I was working in talk radio and hearing all those corporate Republican talkers on the radio claim back in 2008 that Barack Obama was the most liberal and far-left senator in the Senate. I mean, that was a talking point, and I heard that ad nauseum. I think many of you who remember that election, you remember that being said all of the time. It was a talking point for Republicans. But that talking point just seems so laughable to hear today. I mean, doesn't it? Because I remember thinking how insulting that charge really was, not to Barack Obama, but to Bernie Sanders, who was a Democratic socialist, is a Democratic socialist still, and who also arrived in the Senate at the same time as Barack Obama. But they tried to push it on everybody by saying Barack Obama is the most liberal of all time. And I just thought, boy, what an insult to Bernie Sanders. But that's my point. It doesn't matter. All Democrats are scary socialists, according to MAGA Republicans. They're okay with fascism, though. And they can't even really define what socialism is. And that's why Democratic socialism or populism or being progressive or being a populist progressive or progressive populist, as I call it, doesn't exactly scare me. And it shouldn't scare Democrats one bit. But you see, that's been the old problem with the corporate Democratic Party establishment. They're always afraid, not just of their own shadow, but they are always afraid of the big bad Republicans. And what will the big bad Republicans say? But mostly they are afraid of losing their nice cushy jobs to real working class candidates who simply want to serve the people in office. And they don't want to serve the corporate interests like DTE or lobbyists like AIPAC. That's why it was such great news that the Mop Up Michigan Ballot Initiative, which will bar DTE and Consumers Energy from donating to campaigns, now that will be officially on the ballot for us, the working class, the voters, to approve. The aforementioned State Senate Majority Leader, Winnie Brinks, refused to take that bill up to adopt the initiative. Now, you see, the state legislature here in Michigan has the power to approve ballot initiative proposals before they actually go on the ballot. And so that way they can mess with the language as well. And that way they can pass the bills and then we would never have a chance to vote on them. It's happened before. But the Democratic majority in the state Senate will not pass such a bill. So that's good. That means we will get to vote on this ballot initiative. And you know it's going to pass with flying colors. I'm going to predict around 65%, maybe 70, which is why it's just, well, on brand for the MAGA State House, led by House Speaker and MAGA man baby Matt Hall, to pass a bill that would have blocked us from getting a chance to vote on the initiative. Because, you know, when it comes to protecting corporate interests, well, you can always count on MAGA Republicans. However, sadly, you can also count on a number of Democrats in the State House who did the same. That's why progressive working class populists are beating MAGA Republicans and also beating corporate establishment Democrats. The working class needs a change. Coming up, Jessica Newman will join me here in just a moment. You're listening to LOL.
Helping push a strong progressive message from Kalkaska to Kalamazoo, from Monroe to Marquette, from Detroit to DeWitt. From Trenton to Traverse City. Okay, Pat, I think they get the idea. It's Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. Show archives are available wherever you're listening to the show. Left of Lansing is now on Patreon. You can check out a complete archive of the show and other stellar content Pat doesn't share on the show. Visit patreon.com/leftoflansing. Become a member for free and check out Left of Lansing on YouTube as well. Now, here's Pat Johnston.
So last week we talked with Brandon Snyder of Michigan's Working Families Party, and during that discussion, Mr. Snyder informed us how the WFP will connect with Michigan's Democratic Socialist Party to ensure working class progressives have the best chance at winning elections. But more importantly, that the kind of working class progressive message, you know, that message that has been sadly missing from the Democratic Party for a few decades here, is actually finally being represented in each and every election. Jessica Newman is a DSA member here in Michigan, and she's been part of Senator Bernie Sanders' presidential campaign, as well as campaign manager for progressive Chris Gilmer Hill, who defeated incumbent Helena Scott in Michigan State House District 8 election earlier this month in the primary. She's also secretary of the Ferndale School Board, and she's also director of politics and policy for United for Respect. Jessica, did I get all that right?
You got it all in there. Thank you, Pat.
All right. And you are also an outspoken advocate for the working class, for the populist progressive movement, for public education, and for leading the way to changing the way things have been done here on the local side, on the state side, and on the national government side. So it's my pleasure to have you back here on Michigan's premier progressive podcast. How are things going?
Things are going well, Pat. Slowed down a little bit, but you know, I like to stay busy. So it feels really good right now.
Sounds like it. Well, can you first talk about Chris Gilmer Hill's victory? Because Jessica, as I've talked about on the show, I kind of, especially after the 2024 election, I was saying, you know, I think we got to do it like kind of like how MAGA did it, or kind of like how the conservative movement did it way, way back then. And that is to focus on local races, be them a school board or a city council race or even a state house race. And, you know, you helped run a successful campaign to defeat a Democratic incumbent here for a state house race. How did you do it?
Well, Pat, I think one really important distinction between us and the MAGA movement that I want to draw at the top is that we are actually people powered, right? So the Koch brothers were an enormous part of what made MAGA a successful threat. But what we're doing is building real grassroots working class power, block by block, neighborhood by neighborhood, talking to people about the issues that matter to them, because we are funded by grassroots dollars, right? So we are not beholden to opinions, policy, priorities that are unpopular. So we were able to run an unapologetic campaign that was taking on some of the biggest fights that you're seeing across the state and across the country, really, in primary elections and now again in the general election, whether it's the fight against data centers and the way they're going to decimate, pour gallons of diesel into our air and our water and decimate our communities, whether it's fighting the monopoly of DTE and consumers' energy, because we've built this movement through the Democratic Socialists of America and laying the groundwork over years, right? By fighting those fights, you know, we've run successful campaigns for the library board here in Ferndale, in addition to running a successful race to get Denzel McCampbell elected to Detroit City Council. All of these unapologetic grassroots campaigns built out our muscle and our ability to really run a sophisticated effort to get someone like Chris over the finish line against an entrenched incumbent. And again, running on those issues that really resonated, whether you were in Pleasant Ridge or all the way over in Dexter Linwood in our district.
So you just mentioned some of the victories that Democratic Socialists have experienced here of late. And I remember back last year getting to talk with Denzel McCampbell when he was running against Karen Whitsett there in Detroit. One thing, and this is something I brought up last week, but I would like to get your take on it. One thing that I've been hearing, I'm sure you've been hearing, is like when it came to Dr. Abdul Al-Sayed's victory, it showed, though, that he struggled in certain areas, especially in Detroit. And I've been hearing from many establishment folks that, hey, telling you, black voters, they just don't really go for this progressive movement. They don't really go for the progressive message. Yet at the same time, we have Denzel McCampbell on the city council there in Detroit. And then we had Donovan McKinney winning the congressional race in Detroit. And then we have other victories, just like we said here with Chris Gilmer Hill's victory. So I hate that so much. And I'm sorry if I'm rambling, but I hate hearing that argument so much, because that it sounds like there are some who want to treat black voters as if like they're a monolith. They're just like anybody else.
Absolutely. Listen, I think that there's a distinction between people who like to maybe play it a little bit safer when you're talking about a primary election, and that really doesn't have much to do with policy, but with, you know, I know this person, they've done okay. You would see that in the case of some incumbents, right, that have defeated progressives. I think it has less to do with policy and a lot more to do with familiarity. And I'll say specifically, you know, in the race with Abdul and Haley, I think that there, first of all, has been a ton of effort on Abdul's part to do a lot of incredible outreach to the Black community over the past several months, but certainly in the last several weeks post-election, build that trust. He's had a ton of attendance and a great response and reception at these meet and greets and other events that he's done in Detroit. His issues are resonating with people, no matter who they are or where they live, but certainly in Detroit. And I think you said it yourself. We've had several progressive wins, open Democratic Socialist wins, I should say, from Denzel McCampbell to Chris to Donovan, who also ran as an open, unapologetic Democratic Socialist in his successful defeat of Sri Tanadar, another incumbent in Detroit. So, you know, when you're talking about issues like being able to pay your bills and also being able to go to the doctor, when you're talking about high quality public schools and ensuring that every kid, no matter where they live, gets the same high quality education, which is their right. When you're talking about making sure that you can breathe that clean air, when you can drink that water, that transcends lines, right? So we are reaching people. I'll say in Chris's race in particular, there were some really incredible bright spots. We outright won several working class precincts across the city of Detroit, both in absentee ballots and on election day. And as you know, those absentee voters, especially those early absentee voters, tend to be a little bit older and more conservative. And when I say the word conservative, I want to be clear that, again, I don't think that's a policy choice. I think that's playing it safe because these communities have been under siege for years, right? You can't really blame people for trying to really weigh their choices and be careful. Mm. And so I do think, though, once we get in office, once we demonstrate that we are here for the community, that we do run as not just a different campaign, but we govern differently and in a way that centers the people, we win every demographic over.
So, Jessica, what made you want to join and work for Chris Gilmer Hill's State House campaign?
Chris and I have been organizing alongside each other within the Democratic Socialist chapter in Detroit for several years, I want to say over 4 years, specifically working on a lot of those campaigns that I talked about, from the library board in Ferndale, electing Brianna Foraker and Jonathan Ross, to working on Denzel McCampbell's city council race and getting him elected to city council, all the way up until today. I've seen up close just how brilliant, kind, and generous, and what an incredible organizer Chris is, how much he truly cares about his community. And so it was really actually my honor to give my help and lend my expertise to his campaign and get him over the top. He is going to be an incredible asset in this legislature, that I know for sure.
We've been talking about democratic socialism here for a little while, and I was wondering, what made you gravitate towards wanting to be a DSA member?
You know, I was one of the folks that was a little bit after the Bernie wave, but not quite. So definitely inspired to start looking into openly calling myself a democratic socialist post-2016. I worked for the Communications Workers of America, and, you know, the Union movement and the democratic socialist movement are intertwined, right? Injury to one is an injury to all. That idea of solidarity is a core socialist value. It's something that just resonated and made a lot of sense to me. And Bernie's way of talking about how the world works made everything make more sense. It is not left or right. It is bottom versus top. And so, you know, I really started looking into my local chapter. At the time, I lived in Washington, D.C., met a lot of folks through socials, campaign work out there. But what really inspired me to say, yes, I'm going to pay my dues, I'm going to sign up, was actually the Charlottesville attacks back in 2017 when Heather Heyer was murdered by Nazis openly marching in the streets. And I said, you know, if people like me are being murdered for their beliefs, it's time for me to put my money where my mouth is and stand in solidarity with the folks that have the courage of their conviction to fight for what actually works for people. So I've been in this fight for, oh man, a long time, since 2017, like I said. And the more that I have organized and seen how our policies really not just resonate with people, but actually improve and transform people's lives, the more I've become dedicated to making sure that we can spread our message and show our politics and govern for people in a humane way across the country.
I know you had the hope, probably, but are you a little surprised to see how quickly the Democratic Socialist message is gaining in popularity within Democratic voter circles and independents, too?
You know, I'm not going to lie, it is a little surprising that we've been able to break through against all this money, right? When you're talking about millions and millions of dollars being spent specifically to villainize, demonize, and lie about candidates just because they want to do things in the best interest of people, it's hard to find that hope, but you keep that flame alive. But what I will say is that it is impossible to buy integrity. And something that I saw when I was on Bernie Sanders' campaign in 2020 is how many people would say, you know, I may not agree with the guy, but I have respect for him because I know that he says what he believes. And I think at the end of the day, when you're running as a DSA member, when you're endorsed by DSA, when you run a DSA campaign, again, rooted in those grassroots dollars where you're beholden to what the people want and not beholden to what special interests want, that resonates with voters. Voters can see it. You know, at the end of the day, while I am, you know, I guess slightly surprised, I guess I'm not, because voters can see through the BS. And it's been wonderful to see that these special interest groups can light tens of millions of dollars on fire trying to lie about what is in the best interest of the people, and the voters are smarter than that.
Voters seeing through the BS. You know, I heard the I heard the Mirrors News podcast that you did recently with Andrea Bightley, and I think she's like a communication strategist and describes herself as this old-time Republican, not with the current MAGA movement, I guess. And she also was a strategist for former Detroit Mayor Mike Duggan's failed gubernatorial race. And she said something which I agreed with, and it was where she said something that after the August 4th primary, Andrea said that she didn't completely take into account how angry the Democratic Party voting base truly is, not only with the Trump regime, that goes without saying, but with their own party leaders. And I feel like many in the establishment class, Jessica, still are not really understanding this fact, despite what happened with the race that you were working on, Chris Gilmer Hill's race, or Donovan McKinney's congressional win, or William Lawrence's win in Senator Alyssa Slotkin's former seat. Even more, though, you know, there were other incumbents or bigger name establishment figures who lost races in local races places like in West Michigan as well. So it just, even despite all that, still seems to me that there are establishment figures inside the state and I think National Democratic Party, and to an extent, maybe even inside the media bubble in Lansing and D.C., who still are not grasping this anger factor. Is that your feeling as well?
I think that gives them a little too much credit. I think it's a purposeful strategy here, to be honest with you. So a great saying on that I love to trot out once in a while is that the center hates the left more than they hate fascists. So at this point, it's, to me, it's intentional ignorance, right? So when we see folks like Hillary Scolton coming out and attacking the Democratic nominee more in the general election fight than they are ever saying a word about the fascist on the ticket in Mike Rogers, who is unequivocally far more of a threat to any of the values that she claims to hold. When you see people amplifying that, when you see Neera Tanden going on a Twitter rant, I think someone said today that she tweeted at least 32 times between 7 in the morning and 11 at night yesterday and started again at 7 in the morning today. Most of these tweets are about attacking progressives and leftists in general election fights. That feels purposeful. And not only that, I mean, we have evidence of this, right? Third Way came out and said they want to spend $15 million to vilify the left in DSA, specifically want to hire people who are going to go through and comb through people's social media. The New York Times is reporting on, apparently, that it's bad to be a class traitor, that the co-chair of New York City DSA's home is more important than the values that the organization and, you know, embodied by their mayor espouses and how they govern. It's intentional misdirection. You know, the biggest indictment of their politics is a leftist like Abdul El-Sayed winning a general election in a swing state. So I truly believe that they are more comfortable with seeing Mike Rogers take that Michigan Senate seat than they are risking losing that cudgel that they have over policies that would force them to face their donor class, which has an enormous hold over them and the policies that they espouse.
And just want to make sure that we mention that while we are talking about democratic socialism, the DSA party, that Dr. Abdul El-Sayed, the progressive Democrat in the Michigan Senate race, is not a DSA member. So just want to make sure that we do get that out there. But he is part of the progressive working class movement. And I'm not sure if you saw this, Jessica, but the aforementioned Democratic congresswoman from West Michigan, Hillary Scolton, who you just mentioned, she did release a statement here on Tuesday, August 25th, saying she doesn't want to be part of a unified campaign with Dr. Abdul El-Sayed. And she also said, and I quote, "I have long said that I will not campaign with someone who continues to associate themselves with Hassan Piker." But then at the same time, like you said, that's basically her way of saying, I guess I'm okay with the fascism that's happening right now.
That's exactly what she's saying. And I have to say, too, as a Jewish resident formerly of West Bloomfield, whose family belongs to the synagogue that was attacked by the terrorists last year, I take issue with the way that this entire conversation around being an anti-Zionist and critical of Israel is the same as anti-Semitism. And, you know, folks like Hillary Scolton actually make me feel less safe. When people are able to draw a distinction between the horrendous actions of Israel, the genocide that they've been perpetrating since October 7th, the horrendous crimes that they've committed against the people of Palestine for, you know, decades, when people fail to draw that distinction between their actions and my being a proud Jewish American, I feel less safe. And frankly, I've been concerned that there would be attacks on my community for many years before this happened. What happened to Temple Israel was inexcusable. There is no excuse for it. To pretend that there is no context to describe why someone would take such a horrendous action is to be willfully blind to the context that allows you to stop the cycle of violence. And so saying that our allegiance to a foreign country, which, you know, when you look at who is donating to Hillary Scolton's campaign, when you look at who's donating to the campaigns of a lot of the people who've been the most virulent in trying to denounce a Twitch streamer, by the way, who's not running for anything, last I checked, and lives in LA and is not, you know, a resident of the state of Michigan. When you see people who are more fixated on what this man has to say than on their actual Democratic candidate, I say, just look at the money, just follow the money. See their voting record in Congress, see who they spend their time with. That should tell you everything you need to know about what their priorities are. And I find it disingenuous. I find it also incredibly offensive. Again, as somebody who is a Jewish American from West Bloomfield.
Well, it just comes down to the AIPAC money then, doesn't it?
Yep.
I mean, that's really what this is that you're seeing those who take that money, who make those charges against fellow Democrats who are rightfully criticizing what Israel's government, not every Jewish person in the world, just we're talking about Israel's government, but this is what they do to try to turn around and to shut people people up. And is it really just that easy just to look at the money? It's that simple, isn't it?
It is. And I'll be very clear. The AIPAC movement is not a Jewish movement. It is a Christian Zionist movement that is also Jewish and, you know, has several different constituencies that give money and fuel it, right? So AIPAC is led by Christo-fascists. Some of their top leadership are not Jewish. They are absolutely funded primarily by MAGA donors. There are plenty of Jewish Democrats that also give. There are plenty of just centrists that give to their movement. But to say that that is somehow representative of every Jew's opinion is just flat out wrong. I mean, I think there's actually been polling that shows not only the Jewish opinion is split on this issue at best, but there was polling that just came out yesterday that said Michigan voters see what's happening in Gaza as a genocide. I think it was 80%. This was IMEU, Institute for Middle East. And I'm blanking on what the U stands for, but IMEU put out this polling yesterday. It was in all of the first primary states for the 2028 cycle. And overwhelmingly, voters are saying that they want sanctions on the state of Israel. They want this to end. And I'll say this. I worked at AIPAC over a decade ago. So yes, I sure did. And I could not be in a more different place today, ideologically speaking. And actually, my time there really radicalized me and pushed me further in the direction where I am in terms of seeking peace and understanding that what's happening at the Middle East is quite a different story than what the mainstream media would like to paint or liked to paint at the time. And so I'll say that AIPAC has known for years that their position has been losing relevance and salience, especially among Jews of my generation. I'm a millennial. And so they've been on a concerted effort to try to change that. And they made also a very conscious decision in 2018 after AOC won her primary against Joe Crowley, who was a staunch supporter of Israel and AIPAC, a very close friend of AIPAC, to be more outward in their spending. And, you know, what they did was create all of these shell PACs and other ways of giving to organizations named like Blue Wave or Democrats for Democracy or, you know, things that had absolutely nothing to do with Israel, because they know that the average American, the average voter, isn't thinking about Israel as their top issue. And now what they've done is actually made the entire issue toxic as a result of how outward they've been. You know, I think there's not only the carrot, just to get back to the question, is it easy to follow the money? It's easy to see the carrot in how difficult it is to fund these campaigns, frankly. I think they spent historic amounts of money on this Senate race, right? It's easy to see how much they're also using this as a stick to say, we will come after you. We will spend enormous amounts of money to tar and feather you, to call you names, to spread smears and say lies about you. So there's those two pieces of this, both like the easy money of being able to get all of these large donations if you are in league with AIPAC's policies and their positions, and how scary it is to say that I don't agree with that and I'm willing to take a stand that puts me in harm's way, puts me in a position to have millions spent against me. And I think you have no further to look than what happened with Andy Levin, a Jewish American who was the president of his synagogue, versus Haley Stevens, right? When he dared to be even slightly critical of Israel.
That's kind of where my eye really opened up to. It was that race. And then that's when I was that. And that's why I knew this was going to be inevitable within the Democratic Party, especially that we were going to have this fight over AIPAC. It was already, in fact, I think it was when the 2016 Democratic convention that there was a fight and what kind of language to put in regarding Israel. And so if it was happening back then, I knew this was going to probably bubble up into the surface, and rightly so. In fact, you know, if we had Florida Mike Rogers, I think it was just being reported saying that he's trying to keep AIPAC a little bit at arm's length in the Senate race. Of course, he's taking their money, but he doesn't really want them having much of a presence here. And I think that's a major story, because that means that now even Republicans are understanding how toxic AIPAC has become.
That's absolutely right. Which it's funny that right after he made that, or that was leaked, I would say, to the press, which I have to imagine that that's exactly how it happened. He went and did a West Coast swing and raised a ton of money from folks out in LA, explicit AIPAC fundraisers. So, you know, I think this is Mike Rogers, who at every turn, I'll say this, he's had a lot of time to come up with a strategy for the general election against Abdul. And he's also been trying to take every attack that he can kind of away from Abdul, even if it's disingenuous and probably not going to work. So yeah, they are seeing the writing on the wall that this money is toxic. It is turning off a ton of their own voters. It's turning off certainly the general electorate to see that one group, which, by the way, I would like to be very clear, because a lot of folks like to downplay the influence that AIPAC has. The donors behind AIPAC are folks like Miriam Adelson and the estate of the Home Depot family, the Lowe's family. I mean, these are billionaires that give to multiple different PACs, not just AIPAC. And they use AIPAC also in the ways that I mentioned, with those shell PACs, with the hundreds of other super PACs and things that spring up overnight. So it's easy to try to obscure the influence that this group of people has, but it is actually enormous and widespread. And when you add it all up and sort of look at the folks that are behind it, it is undeniable. So, you know, I think they're just going to find different ways to spend this money. Also, I don't know that he's going to be successful in keeping AIPAC out of this fight, right? I think that this is a fight that they really want to pick. So it'll be interesting to see how that all shakes out, but it is quite notable, as you said, that they're even seeing that writing on the wall.
I just love hearing some people trying to give their sagely advice and tell Dr. Abdul and other Democrats, stop talking about AIPAC, just don't talk about it anymore. But then my counter question is, fine, but why is AIPAC so interested in our races?
Exactly.
So, listen, we just have a couple moments left here. Real quick, you know, we talked about you being on the Ferndale School Board. Why did you want to get involved with that?
You know, so I have always been involved in organizing my community for better. I think my passion for this specific position really was inspired by my involvement in the Invest in My Kids petition, which is, if I remember, the reason last time that I was on your show,
yes,
was to talk about my involvement in that and digging deeper into school finance, the state of public education, especially in the state of Michigan, seeing what an impact the school board can have on the local community, how important it is, not only to ensuring that high quality education for our kids, but to ensuring that our communities are strong, really inspired me to go for it. So there was actually a vacancy on the school board that I applied for. I was appointed, and it's just been an awesome, awesome experience.
Jessica, if people would like to learn more about DSA and maybe even become a member, you know, where could they get more information? Where should they go?
You should go ahead and look for the national organization, dsausa.org/join is how you join. If you just go to dsausa.org, you'll learn all about our movement for democratic socialism. DetroitDSA.org is the local Detroit chapter, but I know you have listeners across the state of Michigan, so I would start at that national page. If you join through the national organization, it will route you to your local chapter. I really encourage folks to join, especially I'm in the Metro Detroit area. We have general meetings every month that the public is more than welcome to attend, just to dip their toe in, see if they want to learn more. But DSAUSA.org is where you should go to find out more.
Everybody who's been listening here, let Jessica be the very definition how to really fight back against the system and to really lend your voice to this working class cause, because she's doing it on the local level, like on the school board there in Ferndale, and she's doing it on the state level, and then also even here on the national level at times as well. Get involved like she has. Jessica, thank you so very much for being on. I do wish you would have a little more to say about things. You know, I feel like I kind of had to really work at that, but but thank
next
you
time.
Again. Next time. But thank you again, and I would love to have you on again soon, okay?
I would love that. Thank you so much, Pat. It's been a pleasure.
If you'd like to talk to Pat at any time, his email is leftoflansing@gmail.com. Need to vent about the Trump regime? That's leftoflansing@gmail.com. Need to complain about stupidity in Lansing and in Washington, D.C.? That's leftoflansing@gmail.com. Want to debate which Great Lake is the best? That's leftoflansing@gmail.com. That one's a fun one. Bye.
A special thanks to Jessica Newman for bringing her energy, her fight, her humor, but mostly her political smarts here to the show this week. I'll link to the national DSA site, and I'll provide a link to the Metro Detroit chapter as well. I made sure to write down this phrase. I wanted to write down this phrase that Jessica said while we were talking about the anger the working class is showing when it comes to the political leadership in both the Democratic and MAGA Republican parties, and how those so-called leaders simply are not getting the message that working class voters are sending right now. Jessica called what these leaders, especially on the Democratic Party side, are showing is intentional ignorance. And that is so true. Intentional ignorance. I'll have more to say about that in my last call here in just a moment. Time now for the Left of Lansing weekly poll. The question this week is, who would you like Democrats criticizing and condemning the most? Those who take AIPAC money or Hassan Piker? You can vote on Left of Lansing's Patreon page. That's patreon.com/Left of Lansing. You can also vote on Left of Lansing's YouTube page or on Twitter at Left of Lansing. Time now for the Left of Lansing Last Call. As I mentioned with Michigan Democratic Socialist of America member Jessica Newman, I just love how all these corporate establishment Democrats and so-called moderate political consultants, sages, and media figures, how they are all lecturing Michigan progressive Senate candidate Dr. Abdullah Sayed, and, you know, all the progressives winning across the country to just stop talking about Israel and the Iran war and Israel's war in Lebanon, and especially stop talking about the pro-genocidal and pro-Israel political action committee known as AIPAC. But then, as I, you know, asked Jessica Newman, I'd still like to understand, why is AIPAC so interested in Michigan's elections? Why? I think it's valid to ask those questions. Because this week, Democratic House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries held a secret meeting with Dear Leader Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner. Jeffries and Kushner are saying that the meeting was all about immigration and housing and the cost of living as they were trying to find common ground. But wait a second. What kind of common ground will Hakeem Jeffries find with Jared Kushner and the fascist Trump regime, let's say, on immigration? Comprehensive immigration reform? Okay, yeah, right. Especially when the Trump regime is pausing all U.S. immigration visa applications by adding more restrictions so that way they can limit those seeking to lawfully enter the country. It's to stop those, according to the Trump regime, from relying on U.S. benefits in order to live. They don't mind giving all of our money to billionaire big tech bros in their data centers. No, no, no. That's fine. That's okay. Everyone, this was never about illegal immigration. Are we getting that yet? And how are you going to talk about the cost of living with Jared Kushner, who recently said this on a podcast?
Where if you want to accomplish something, you know, a lot of people I hear, they complain about what other people do or why it's hard or why it's impossible. And again, I say this as somebody who's been so blessed with so many things in life. But, you know, when I've had challenges or things I've wanted to achieve, I just focus and say, what can I do? And I'll read everything I can get my hands on. If I fail at one, the door closes, I'll try the window. If the window closes, I'll try the chimney. If the chimney closes, I'll try to dig a tunnel. It's just, if you want to accomplish something, you just have to go at it.
You know what sickens me the most is how there were actually some corporate establishment Democrats recently using the exact same language, criticizing that those upset with current political leaders or with the big tech bros or with our Middle Eastern wars or with the Epstein class, that we are just complainers. Yeah, they're sounding just like Jared Kushner. And look, I know I'm not the first one to bring up this fact, but why in the hell is Hakeem Jeffries meeting with someone who doesn't even hold an official government role? Why? As our good Michigan progressive friends from Distill Social said on their Substack here recently, the deeper problem with centrist Democratic leadership is not simply that it's too cautious, it's that it often treats accommodation with the far right as serious governance while treating demands from its own progressive base as unrealistic or disruptive. That contradiction cannot hold forever. I agree. I mean, they're right, because Hakeem Jeffries has already said that he's not going to the press for Medicare for All. And Jeffries appointed three pro-Israel Democrats to sit on a House Foreign Affairs Committee, with one of them getting a leadership role. I mean, that's an example of corporate establishment Democrats playing this game of intentional ignorance, as Jessica Newman put it. A strong majority of Democratic base voters are done with Democrats taking AIPAC money and sending more of our money and resources over to Israel and to help fight Israel's war. Like in Iran, we are done with it. Yet, Democratic Party leaders put three pro-Israel leaders in powerful positions. And then this week, we had to deal with more Democrats shouting and crying and complaining about progressive Twitch streamer Hassan Piker. Many Democrats, you know, quickly just ran in front of cameras and microphones this week to once again chastise Hassan Piker, this time for supposedly calling for violence on Jewish Americans. Of course, though, that is not what he did, not one bit. As I've stated on here, including with many others, which also includes mainstream liberals, Hassan Piker was warning pro-Zionists for putting Jewish Americans as a collective in danger by insisting that the most important single issue to every Jewish American is Israel. And Hassan Piker said that Jewish Americans are not a monolith. What? There's nothing wrong with that. So that is so true. Oh, but for speaking that kind of obvious truth, supposedly Hassan Piker is calling for Jewish Americans to be attacked. And, of course, he's once again being called an anti-Semite. And so you had Democrats and the firing squad demanding progressive Democratic Michigan Senate nominee Dr. Abdullah Syed to denounce Hassan Piker once and for all, since Dr. Abdul and Piker toured U of M and MSU last spring, if you recall. Now, while Dr. Abdul didn't denounce Hassan Piker, he said in a statement that Piker does not speak for him. Now, look, Dr. Abdul has been a strong candidate for the most part. And the way that he handled himself and made Fox News' Jesse Waters look like a child this week, that exactly shows us why Dr. Abdul is such a strong candidate. He takes the battle to MAGA Republicans and their state media figures and isn't afraid to take them on in their own backyard. But that statement on Hassan Piker was, kind of a momentary point of weakness there for Dr. Abdul. Don't ever give an inch, because both MAGA and the corporate establishment Democratic Party leadership will keep coming after you. They will eat you alive. Now, we brought up West Michigan establishment Democratic Congresswoman Hillary Scolton, who announced this week that she just cannot endorse Dr. Abdul because of his associations with Hassan Piker. Now, just to remind you about Hillary Scolton, she's not only pro-Israel and pro-genocide, but she's just fine and dandy with the ICE Gestapo. Here was Scolton on a Facebook Live video supporting ICE and denouncing Dr. Abdul and the majority of Democratic voters who are calling for ICE to be abolished once and for all.
Abdul Al-Sayed supports a movement called Abolish ICE, which is very similar to defunding the police. It may sound enticing to some when you're rightly enraged by the injustices that have occurred, but did you know that ICE also is the agency responsible for conducting raids and arrests on perpetrators of human trafficking and drug smuggling? If we abolish ICE altogether, who's going to help us track down and investigate human trafficking?
You know, this just proves to me that fascism is just fine with people like Scolton, whose district, by the way, went big time for Dr. Abdul in the primary. That's why my theory on the Hakeem Jeffries-Jared Kushner meeting is that they were talking about Israel. I think that was one of the main topics. But also how to pull corporate MAGA Republicans and corporate Democrats together to block progressive populists like Dr. Abdul from ever changing how things are being done in this country for real. Do not doubt me on that one.
You're listening to Left of Lansing. Music for the show and everything else on Left of Lansing is provided by Wander Beats. To hear the latest project and complete music archives, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site or subscribe to Space Leopard on YouTube. Now, back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan. It's Pat Johnston.
All right, that's going to do it for this edition of The Left of Lansing. Special thanks to Jessica Newman for being on the show this week. And by the way, the Board of Canvassers here in Michigan had a deadlock vote on that regressive voter ID law bill that the Epstein class and MAGA Republicans here in the state tried to get on the ballot for all of us to vote. I mean, this voter ID law would require birth certificates and passports. Now, it'll probably go to the Michigan Supreme Court, but liberals hold a majority on that court, all right? So some good news there, and that's we are in desperate need at times of some good news. But that also shows why paying attention to all races is important, including state Supreme Court races too. And I'd like to end this episode by playing this clip provided by Michigan Advance's editor-in-chief and good friend of the show, John King. Now, you're going to hear strong progressive Democratic state representative Betsy Cafia, another great friend of the show from Michigan's 103rd House District, which is in northwest Michigan around Traverse City. And just listen to Representative Cafia speak some plain and true words to our Democratic Governor Gretchen Whitmer during a shutdown Line 5 rally in Lansing here this week. Just listen to this.
I have a message for Governor Gretchen Whitmer, because she ran on shutting down Line 5, right? We remember this. Yeah. This was a promise she made to the people of Michigan, all 10 million of us, and more importantly, the Great Lakes that need to be here long after each one of us has walked on. I believe in second chances, and so Governor Gretchen Whitmer, you need to understand something. You get a second chance now. You get a second chance because you failed in July by pressuring Eagle to approve Enbridge's request to build a tunnel. What a betrayal of the people of the state of Michigan.
What a betrayal. But you get a second chance because the Supreme Court reeled it back in. My message for Gretchen Whitmer is this. The flag of this state says Tribor. That is Latin for I defend. Gretchen Whitmer, your job when you leave this office is to defend the Great Lakes, to honor the treaties, to remember that water is life, and to use your considerable power to shut down Line 5. Make sure, Governor, that your legacy is not one covered in oil and lies. Shut down Line 5, honor the treaties. Thank you.
Now you see, that's the kind of fight, a working class fight, that working class Michiganders want to see from their political leaders, both in Michigan and in D.C. Thank you, Representative Betsy Cafia. Until next week, remember, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan.
You've been listening to Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. Left of Lansing was produced by Pat Johnston, brainstormed by Pat Johnston, researched by Pat Johnston, written by Pat Johnston, edited by Pat Johnston, and yes, hosted by Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. Thanks to our good friend Rich for website assistance, and thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. We thank Audio Boom for publishing the podcast every week. Visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to Michigan's premier progressive podcast, and we'll talk with you again next week.